should say. Welcome to Behind the Screens. Let me actually get this in full screen. That'd be a wee bit better, eh? There we go. So as you will see, everyone, things are looking a little bit different today, and I want to apologise in advance. There have been some extenuating circumstances. Ian currently isn't here. There's been something with work at the moment, so I'm currently hosting just now, so obviously I don't have access to all the Twitch assets, so things are looking a little bit different, so apologies in advance. This is very much going to be a free-for-all style episode, but it's going to be really good fun. I'm really excited about it, and as you can see, we have a guest here with us. But before I introduce our guest, we have another fellow member of the Cackle crew, Lindsay. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I was a wee bit stressed, but I think I'm all right now.
We're pulling it together.
We'll make it through. It's all the lasses tonight, and we have
it's girls' night.
It is a girls' night, and we have replacing Ian in the Cackle crew tonight. He's not gonna be happy I've said that, but
deserved.
We have Sophie. How are you doing, Sophie?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. And this is the first episode that I've been on with you on Behind the Screens as
it
well.
It is. This is an honour.
Because you've been on the show a few times now, haven't you? This is your fourth appearance, is it?
It's my fourth. So I've done Saw 3, I've done The Invitation with Lindsay, and the last one I was on, I did Lake Placid. So, yeah. This is my fourth one. I'm getting to be part of the furniture now, so
an extended member of the Cackle crew at this point.
Literally, yes. Now just a full-on replacement for Ian, so.
Yes. we won't have the pre-show and the post-show. Like I say, it's a little bit of a kind of free-for-all today. Before we get into the movie, as you probably all see from the title, we are talking about an absolute classic today, which is the 1960 cycle. But I think we should be plugging. We'll start with all the plugs and the housekeeping for the socials. If you want to follow us at Behind the Screams, and Lindsay might be able to correct me on this as well. This is testing our knowledge a little bit, but obviously you're on the Twitch just now, but you can follow us at Behind the Screams on Twitter and Instagram. We also have our TikTok. Is there anything I'm missing there, Lindsay?
We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook.
Yeah.
Instagram, Facebook and TikTok are all just Behind the Screams podcast, and we're at Screams Behind on Twitter.
Yes, exactly. There we go. And you can find us pretty much anywhere where podcasts live, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, anywhere that you can listen to audio. And you want to hear our voices as well as see our beautiful faces, you can find us all over the internet. But if people want to follow you, Lindsay, where can people find you?
I am at
Hollow Blossom.
I know. I'm at @HyattLindsay_ on all social media.
And Sophie, where can people find you and your amazing makeup looks? Because we've not gone to that yet, because you're an iconic makeup artist now. Getting all the bookings.
Trying. So on Twitter I am Soph Serves Face, and on Instagram I'm Sophie Serves Face. So on Twitter I'm usually just chatting shite. I'm sorry to anyone who follows us on Twitter at the minute because it's become a Love Island Stan account. But yeah, on Instagram I am just doing makeup looks. I'm just about finishing up my makeup through the decades series, so I'm in the 2000s at the minute, which is just a tragic time for beauty and looks. Lots of thin eyebrows and frosted lids. It's not a good time.
Absolutely not.
No, really, really, really. I look like really hard faced, like I'd bat the ear after having a couple of kids in the top. Like, it's not good. So yeah, you can follow us on there if you'd be so kind to do so.
Yes, please follow both of these fantastic ladies on Twitter and Instagram. If you want to follow me, I'm not sure what I can say about myself other than gay chaos, I suppose. You can follow me on Twitter, Zoe_Pugh, and Twitch. I'm just finishing up my Pride Month fundraiser. You can check out all the vods for that. I just had my last guest for Pride Month. Sophie, you were one of my guests for Pride Month. We did a makeup look. That was so much fun.
Really fun. Yes, it was fun.
You did a fantastic look as well. It was like truly chef's kiss.
It was very colourful. There was glitter and the most extra false eyelashes, as is usually the case, to be fair. Go donate to Jason Page and Mermaids, because it's a really just amazing cause. Go donate.
Yeah, for anybody that is listening to this live, the fundraiser is on till tomorrow, and I've still to donate the final bits and subs and gift subs for the month of June, because you've all been going hard with the bitties in the past week, which is amazing to see, so I'll be donating those. And like Sophie said, it's all going to Mermaids. And I have to say, after that stream as well, I had a shopping list of stuff. I got those eyelashes you told me about, I got the neon pigments, and like, I'm obsessed.
Is she an influencer? She's an influencer.
Actually though. Well, in that case then, we'll jump straight into the movie and chat. As usual, if you have any questions for us, or if you want to get involved and talk about the movie with us, please feel free to do so. We'll start off as we usually do with the IMDb plot for the movie. So as mentioned, we're talking about an absolute classic today, and I know it's a massive favourite of Lindsay's. It's the 1960 original movie, Psycho. Psycho was directed by Alfred Hitchcock. As I mentioned, it was released in 1960, and it stars Anthony Perkins as Norman Bates, Janet Leigh as Marion Crane, Vera Miles as Lila Crane, and then John Gavin as Sam Loomis. There's a whole massive cast of amazing actors in this, but that's the top cast. And the IMDb plot, and as usual, they're very straight to the point, aren't they? And just short and sweet. It's as follows. A Phoenix secretary embezzles $40,000 from her employer's client, goes on the run, and checks into a remote motel run by a young man under the domination of his mother. Would you say that kind of is Psycho in a nutshell?
It's a funny one, because you almost forget about like Marion stealing the money at the start, and the focus is a lot of the time on Norman Bates' story. But this is one of those films, I don't know if it was the first film to do it, but that if you're given a protagonist and then halfway through it completely switches to somebody else, and you're not expecting that, such a like a breakneck change of pace, really.
Definitely.
When it was first released, I think Hitchcock was like, he sort of made it a thing of like, you have to see this film from the beginning. Like, if anyone turned up to the pictures late, he was like, sorry, you're not allowed to let them in. Because if they came in and it was like, where's Janet Leigh? She's just not in it anymore. It's like, sorry, you can't come in.
No, that's very true. One question I want to ask the both of you, and I know your answer, Lizzie, because you're a massive fan of this film, but when did you both first see Psycho? Because I feel like even if you're not like a big movie fan, everyone knows the shower scene, everyone knows the music from Psycho. I take it that you've both watched this before.
Yeah,
I was like 18 or 19 when I first saw it. I actually had to watch it for a college project. And just kind of fell in love with it from there.
I can't remember the first. I think it might have been sort of like mid-teens, maybe 15, 16, having to watch it for like GCSE music. Like maybe, because I know we had to watch like Jaws and like other films around like how music built tension and things. So I'm sure that was like around the first time, and I was just like, what is this? Like, this is just mind blowing. Like, I'm shook. This is like, what is going on?
Shook us to your core.
Literally.
I was kind of the same. I didn't watch this for uni or like school or anything. like that, but it is, it's one of those films, kind of like Shawshank Redemption or like Sunset Boulevard. It's one of those films that you study in school or uni. As problematic as Alfred Hitchcock is, and we've talked about that a couple times because we covered The Birds earlier this year, and I talk a little bit about this in the anthology that's coming out later this year, the Hear a Scream one. I do love Hitchcock movies. I grew up watching like Rear Window, Strangers on a Train, Vertigo, and Psycho, and Birds. But Psycho is definitely like one of my favourites. I feel like there really is like nothing like that out there, especially for that time, and it's just like so undeniably iconic, and like watching it even now, it's still like very beautifully shot. Like the black and white really, it's ageless. Like I don't know if you guys got that as well, but when I was rewatching, I was like, damn, this is still like a very like aesthetically pleasing movie as well.
It's so funny, like with the black and white, I only just like very recently found this out, like the black and white is so beautiful, but even of the time, like it was unusual. It was the 60s, like there was Technicolor, and the only reason it's shot in black and white is because the studio didn't have a lot of faith in it, and Alfred Hitchcock wanted to save as much money as possible, and it was cheaper to film in black and white. And it's like that is one of the things that makes it so good, because obviously we have the, is it Gus Van Sant in colour remake?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a shot for shot remake. But something about it being in colour, it's just not the same. It cheapens it almost, I think.
Yeah. I think it's just, there's so much of it that still holds up to this day. Like, even you sort of don't even notice the black and white. It's just, it's a classic for a reason. It's like, even, you know, watching, and I've seen it like a few times before watching it for this, but like, obviously the soundtrack's still unreal. Like even the effects of, like, you know, when you see obviously Mother later on, like even that still looks really good. It's still really scary. Like that shower scene is scary. Like, you know, it still holds up. It's such a good film.
Definitely. And something that we've talked about on the podcast quite a couple times, especially with more of the classics, is that practical effects really hold to the test of time as opposed to CGI. You know, how many movies have we talked about, Lindsay, that have come out maybe in the past 15 years that don't hold a candle to Psycho in terms of effects and things like that? And even as you say, when you get the big reveal of Mother, like that's still a very impactful scene. You don't look at that and like cringe at it. Or at least I don't anyway.
You cringe as like, oh god, it looks awful, oh my god, I'm scared, but like you wouldn't think like, fucking hell, that looks shit.
I thought, because there is quite a lot in this movie to dissect, and obviously like I said, tonight is a little bit more of a free-for-all, we don't have like a set kind of agenda, so feel free to move the conversation as you want, because there's a lot of themes in this, but I thought we could maybe start off with like the main characters and what we think of them, and then like tie the plot into that. Sound good?
Yeah.
I think we should start off with our first character. We will start off with Marion Crane, who is our initial protagonist, but as you say, as it moves along, we go on to Norman. What is your like initial thoughts of Marion? Did it change throughout the course of the film? Like, what do you think of her, and like Janet Leigh's portrayal of her as well? Sorry.
Like me and Lindsay both looking at each other going,
I don't want to interrupt. Let the guest go first. But I can talk if you want.
Like, I think Janet Leigh gives an absolute masterclass in just facial acting.
Yeah.
Like, when she's in the car, and especially like when she's had a run in with the police and she's like changed her car and stuff, and it's the close up on her face, and you can literally see all of those emotions playing through, thinking, shit, I've done the, like, I'm gonna like get caught, this is what's happening. Like, if you go through all of that with her, it's like incredible what she does with her face, like without even, I mean, the score helps like that in the background because it builds that tension. But it's brilliant just what she does. I mean, she's a shit criminal. Like, the choices she makes, she's really bad. But Janet Leigh as an actress, is just the performance she gives in this is phenomenal.
I think, like you mentioned, the first things that pop up to me are those car scenes. Like, say, the score does help, but even in the scenes later when she's with Norman as well, and she knows that something's off about him and she's maybe in a little bit of danger, she's very good at playing a character where she's putting on a face for him, but the audience knows she's putting on a face for him. You know, we've all been in those situations where we maybe feel a bit uncomfortable around somebody, but for our own safety, we're putting on a front. And I don't think that's the easiest thing to act. It's like acting within acting. And she's stunning as well in this movie. She's absolutely stunning in this movie. And like you say, her facial expressions, it conveys so much. Lindsay, what do you think of Marion?
Yeah, like, I totally agree with everything you guys are saying. I think, like, she makes Marion, like, very relatable. Like, when I was watching this today, I think, like, as I've got older, I've kind of watched it, interpreted it in different ways, but I was just, like, looking at all the problems of the characters and thinking how relatable it is. And I think that's what makes this film so timeless as well. It's, like, it's so easy to relate to somebody who wants to be in a relationship with someone else, but there's all these problems, like, relate to Sam because he has all these money problems, and he really wants to be with Marion as well. Like, almost relate to Norman, like, being stuck in his trap of the motel. But, yeah, I just found her super relatable. This person who's, like, overlooked at work, like, very much judged on just being a pretty face, you know, seeing the money and the opportunity, and the guy who was, like, flirting with her, basically saying, like, oh, well, nobody knows I have this money, because he's, like, you know, he has it all through tax evasion, and it's just like, well, who's gonna miss it, really?
Because yeah, even, deserved.
Yeah, exactly. Even he's not phoning the police, because he knows he's got the money through dodgy means. He just wants the money back. He's not gonna, like, get her a message or whatever. So it's like, you almost don't blame her. It's one of those things, we've all probably had those thoughts or been in those situations. It's like, I could do this thing that's wrong that could make my life easier, or I could do the thing that's right. And this film is almost playing out the if you do the thing that's wrong that makes your life easy scenario, what could happen? Because that's the whole thing as well, like at the start of the film, when they do, like, the bird's eye view, and you've got the very specific, like, time and place and date. It's enough to say, like, this could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
It's real life, this is just another day.
Definitely.
That whole Hitchcock thing in it of, like, it's that voyeur, he loves that, doesn't he? Like,
oh yeah.
Like, voyeuristic, like, oh, let's have a look on the, like, everyday life, and let's just peek through the window into the everyday, like, person. Yeah.
If there's two things Hitchcock likes, it's voyeurism and mummy issues.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
100%. What do we think of Marion's boyfriend then, Sam?
Oh, he's a sort, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like, just the wee bit.
That first scene, what a scandal, eh? Like, half-naked, unmarried couples rolling around on the bed. Disgrace.
That's the thing as well. Like, I think people forget sometimes that, like, maybe how ahead of its time this film was. Like, something I would never have been on screen. Like, I think people focus on the toilet part of it because that's what seems the most ridiculous to us. But even if something as normal as two people in bed together in their underwear, like, would never have been on screen in 1960.
Yeah. I think that was, like, a whole, I'm sure there was, like, a whole scandal about it. Like, not, I don't think it was, obviously it was never about Sam being half naked, it was definitely about Marion being in a bra. It's like, oh my god.
The audacity.
Like,
I do have a little bit of trivia for later that I found just before we went live, because I think, like you mentioned, Lindsay, it's important to note that this movie was made at the height of the Hays Code as well, which was the motion pictures production code in Hollywood, so there was a variety of things that you couldn't show on screen, and that got abolished in 1968, so it was still 8 years after this came out. And there's probably more than this, but there's over 10 violations that this movie had, and one of them was that have sex before marriage, you can't show people on screen scantily clad, and Hitchcock was just like, gave me fucks, showed it all. So it was really scandalous for the time, and you know, I think starting off with that scene as well, it's quite bold to do that.
Yeah, he's like, this is what you're getting, lads. We haven't even got to the murder and the mummy issues yet. Like, you're getting half naked unmarried on the bed.
I do like Sam's character at the start though. Like, I couldn't help but almost feel a bit sorry for him. Like, I get good vibes from him and Marion. Like, it definitely seems like the real deal. Like, everybody's been in a breakup, he's got divorced, he's in a lot of debt because of the divorce. It's the kind of thing that would happen to anyone. And I'm just like, I feel a bit shit for you that there's this thing in the way of you two being together. And, you know, I don't blame Marion for trying to look for a quick fix to fix
yeah.
it so they can be together.
I was trying to think of it as well, like, if I was in Marion's shoes, would I have done the same thing? And kind of like at the time, you know, potentially, can't really judge it. I have to say, like, even though we're saying she's a bit of a shit criminal, I could have not, I don't have a poker face, right? I can't lie. And if I was in that situation with the car salesman, I would just be running for the hills. Like, the interrogation side of things, no. How would you have been proposing? Because I think that scene's done really well, because you can tell he's getting, like, more and more suspicious as time goes on.
I think as soon as I clock the policeman, I'd be like, you know what? It's all right, mate. Like, I'll just pretend that I was getting my car. Like, I thought I had a nail in my tyre. Like, like, you're just drawing attention to yourself.
I know, because he's just stood there watching the whole time. Like, he pulls up right after her. Like, it's so dodgy, and she's like, she's so like wide eyed. Like, the whole time, like, oh, can I just get a car, please? Like,
Just give us the car!
It's like, you're a bit as subtle as a brick hen, like, calm down.
Yeah, I'm surprised she didn't just do, like, a whole Grand Theft Auto, like, just get in and just be like, hurrah. I think as soon as I clocked him, I'd have just been like, I'm all right, I've just swapped my car, like, I'll just carry on in mine, thank you.
I think they build tension in this really well, and we'll get into it later when we get, like, the investigator, when he first goes to the hotel and meets Norman. I think that's one thing they do in this really well. It's, like, trying to suss somebody out, but also, like, not giving away that you fully know that you're suspicious of them, if that makes sense. I think, like, they do that really well, and I don't know if you guys were like this, but when she's driving the car as well, you see the policeman behind her, I felt like she was driving so slow, and I was like, come on, head, just bolt it. Just bolt it and go on the side of the road and just go. So she's very calm and collected. Before we get on to our kind of showstopper of Psycho, which is Norman, we'll talk about Marion's sister, which is Lila. What did you both think of Lila?
She's got on my nerves, and I know that's awful. Like, because obviously, if it was my sister, I'd be like, breaking down, like, walls to find out what happened. But, like, I made a note of this later on. I think the way Hitchcock does it is so clever, and maybe the way that Anthony Perkins plays Norman Bates as well. You're almost, maybe it's just me, but, like, when the sort of protagonist switches, I was, like, rooting for Norman a little bit. That's so bad. But I was like, oh.
He's likable, though. That's the thing.
I was like, obviously what he's done is awful, but, like, kind of don't want him to get caught. just stop poking around. Like, just let him be in his little motel. Like, but obviously, you know, that's horrendous. Like, find out what's happened. Like, but I think the way that it's shot and the way that it's played, I think it's almost, you're almost, like, sort of guided for that to happen in a way as well. You know, maybe that's just me.
No, I get that, because I think, you know, I think that is done intentionally, because because Norman does have such a charm to him as well. That's like part of his manner, you know, or he seems like he wouldn't hurt a fly. As we had in the last scene, you know, he doesn't seem very intimidating or anything at all. So I think that's done really well. Lindsay, do you have any thoughts on the sister?
I quite liked her. Like, again, I feel like a lot of the characters in this film are really relatable. And I think the way she's going about it as well, like, not being distraught straight away, she's just kind of like, oh, maybe she's going to see Sam. So she drives to Fairville to try and find out what's going on. I feel like she's really level-headed. And again, like, at the time, it would have been so easy just to make her, like, this screaming emotional banshee. And they don't. And yeah, I appreciate that about her, because she's like, she's super determined as well. Like, she's not like, oh, I'm not gonna go to the motel. She just does it. She's like, I'm going with you, Sam. I'm gonna go and find my sister. And yeah, I like that about her.
So I can hear weird wee berries having a good old snooze. Bless him. That's a fair point you make as well, because not even just then, we still see it now, but particularly in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, you know, women in horror films are portrayed as these screaming banshees, as you say, just flailing around and screaming. And it's not to say that Hitchcock does not do this, because he certainly does, aka the birds, when we talked about that. But really, besides that reveal at the end, and then obviously the shower scene, which is understandable, anyone would be screaming at those scenes. I think the women in this, obviously, it could be portrayed in some better lights, you know, there's this sexualization and stuff like that, but I don't think it's, given the time as well, they're not portrayed in a particularly bad light. I don't know if you both agree or disagree with that, but I think, like, I mean, Marion seems, like, pretty switched on, and so does Lila, you know, they have careers and they have their own lives, and I think they are pretty good characters.
They're written, like, three-dimensional, like, women who are complex and who aren't necessarily angelic either. Like, we all, you know, have urges, and we all have, you know, moments of madness, and, you know, I think that's not just something that's for men who are criminals and things like that. Like, women do that shit too, and that's okay.
Exactly, we're all human at the end of the day, and, you know, it's important to show that side, especially at the time, because women are seen as very prim and proper, whereas, you know, Marion is certainly not that, but, you know, that's not something to do with gender. We're all human, we all make mistakes. It's about the lived human experience.
She's unmarried as well. Like, she's, like, I don't know how old she is, but, like, she looks older than, like, in her early 20s, and she's unmarried. Like, for the time as well, like, that must have been pretty out of the norm.
Definitely. Lindsay, what do you think about, like, the way that Lila and Marion are just the women in, like, Psycho are represented?
Yeah, I think it's, like you say, it's a lot better than other films. Like, we get that kind of scene at the start with the guy who's buying the property, and he's really quite sexist towards Marion, but it's definitely more a comment on him. It's definitely something that the way it's done, you look down on him. And even the other girl that works in the office, she's like, oh, he must have seen my ring. Like, that's almost played off as comedy and not something to be taken seriously, which I don't know if that sounds a bit rude or not, but I thought it was funny anyway.
It is funny.
I thought it was funny.
I rolled my eyes and I was like, oh, fuck's sake.
Because there's always that person in the office, isn't it? It was like, their whole personality is like being married, and like even if they got married like years ago, it's like, oh, I remember, like, I did this on my wedding day, and like, oh, they can't pay attention to me because I'm married.
100%. Oh, that guy at the start, he does not pass the vibe check. He's the epitome of just, you know, those like cartoons of like the big fat cats, and they're like Tories. Like, he is the definition of that.
Yeah.
literally.
Like, oh, I don't believe in unhappiness, I just buy it off.
Oh.
It's like, oh no.
So many guys think that, and it irks me so much. It's like, no, I just actually want you to listen to the things that I have to say, remember them, and then act on it. I don't want you to buy me X, Y, and Z.
Go to therapy, please.
Please.
Exactly.
Also, as well, was anybody else like extremely envious that he just bought his daughter a house for 40k?
Oh, I know, right?
Did you look up how much that is, like, now?
Oh no, it doesn't actually.
It's 363,000 pounds.
Oh my god.
It's just carrying that round in an envelope.
I know.
Oh, the anxiety, I couldn't do that. I don't carry cash anyway. I can't be trusted with it.
The most I carry around is like a pound for me trolley.
Oh, <yeah. laughs>
And even then it's lucky if I've got it.
We'll go on then to the real star of the show, let's be honest. It's Anthony Perkins playing Norman Bates. And I feel like there's so much to say about him, but what are your like initial thoughts of Anthony Perkins' portrayal of Norman, and then just like Norman as a character?
It's just brilliant, isn't it? Like, he just, like, I think again with Janet Leigh, like, there's just so many sides to it. Like, there's the charm, there's the like sort of childlikeness, where he's almost stuck in that sort of child-like state, and you can see it come through when people like start to maybe get to the uncomfortable truth. Like, you can see him start like fidgeting and like stammering and stuff, and like he plays that like not in a sort of like, you know, when actors go for like Oscar bait. Like, it's just like, it's just happening, but then he gets scary with it as well, like when there's that, like, my favourite scene is that when they're having that conversation in the parlour, like him and Marion.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just such a tense scene. And then where she asks them, like, where she says, oh, why don't you put him in a home? And it's like, what do you mean, put him in? And it's like, he just gets sort of like, you see this, like, flash of who he is. And then it's back to, like, oh, yeah, I could do that, yeah. And you're like, oh, fuck, like, you're not okay. Like, I just think he's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Very unhinged, and that scene as well. The audacity to say to somebody, he eat like a bird, as well,
yeah.
And it's the way he says it as well.
It's like the first thing he says, like, she's just sat down and he's like, eat like a bird. Like, excuse me.
I kind of talk, I probably am the same, but Lindsay, what do you think of Norman?
Anthony Perkins and Janet Leigh are cast perfectly in this, like, they both do such an amazing job, and I totally agree with you. Like, there's something about Norman that's, like, so adorable, like, the way he is at the start, like, tripping over himself to try and help Marion, and then you get those little flickers of what is, like, what's to come. Yeah, I think it's done really well, and it's definitely that way, like, you're left at the end of the film. I know we end up getting a prequel series, but you, like, you just want to know more about him, you want to know how he ended up like this, like, how he got DID, like, what his life has been like, what his mum was like. You're left with so many questions, you just want more.
Definitely. I don't know if either of you watched Bates Motel. I loved that show. And Anthony Perkins obviously does a fantastic job as Norman. He's the original Norman. But I did not realise, like, how well Freddie Highmore plays Norman as well. And
yeah.
He looks
yeah.
so much like him. It is insane.
Pretty scary, isn't it?
I kind of want to rewatch it again for, like, the fifth time after watching Psycho, I'm not going to lie.
I was thinking the same thing, to be honest. Just because I've only seen it once and binge-watched it all, and, like, I was watching Psycho again last night, and I was like, just like I was wanting all that information again. I was like, I want more of like Norman and his mum, because Vera Farmiga is so amazing in that as well.
Yeah,
so good. I agree with the both of you. Anthony Perkins' performance, and he got a lot of praise for it after as well. We'll talk about that in the trivia and the awards and accolades Psycho got, but I think like he deserved all the praise for this role. He did so well. Like you say, he plays a very unhinged character, and you said it, Sophie, and so did you, Lindsay, the way that he's like, he's kind of adorable, and he seems like very socially awkward, but he can be charismatic when he wants to be, and then like we get those tiny little flickers of the real him, and then you know, we get the reveal at the end, and like you mentioned as well with DID and his mental health, and we'll get into the mother and stuff in a second as well, but I think his portrayal is so good, and just like the facial expressions, and like that last shot is like forever instilled in my brain when he's got that evil smile. Like, he does that just so well, so well.
Yeah. There's bits like where you can see, like there's another bit where he does something similar to that. I think it's maybe one of the first times that the detective comes, and it's like after the detective leaves, and he's just sort of like stood there, and it's like just as the frame sort of like fading out, and you can see him just sort of go like that.
There you go. That's the face.
It's so creepy, and it's just like, oh. Like, what is he thinking? What is he planning? And I think because he is so unpredictable, I think that's what makes it so scary. It's just like he makes these decisions just on a like a, just a switch, doesn't he? Just like, well, here it is. it's happening now.
it's completely on a whim. Like, you never really like. We'll get into the kills as well that we do see. There's not really much build up to the kills. It's very much he just kind of decides and then it happens, and I think that's one of the scariest parts about him, because you know, we see a lot with like serial killers in cinema and TV, so all of them are different, but you know, we get a lot of them that pre-plan things and they stalk their victim and everything's methodical, whereas Norman, it's kind of like it's that switch, isn't it, and then it just happens. And the fact that you don't know when it's going to happen. I really love those scenes with the private investigator detective, and you can see him getting more and more nervous because he's sussing him out, and he's got like this stammer, and you know, he eventually gets out of him that Marion was there, and then he looks out to the house as well and sees a figure, which is, he assumes, what is the mum. I think this is quite an important scene. What did you guys think of this scene? Because I just love how like, he gets so stressed progressively as that goes on.
Yeah, you can see it's like, it's just see the sheen of like sweat, can't you? Where it's like, oh, yeah. Norman's not in control anymore and he doesn't like it.
No.
Yeah, you can see him like desperately, like the cogs turn and going, how can I be one step ahead? How can I be one step ahead? And like, he's sort of met his match in that private investigator, and he just keeps falling into these traps, doesn't he? And it's, you know, like it sort of echoes back to that conversation he was having with Marion about, oh, we all get into these private personal traps, don't we? And it's like, yep. Yeah, you're in a few big ones here, Norman.
Lindsay, what did you think of those scenes?
That scene in particular is like, it's so well written, like it comes off so natural. Mm. It's not like wink wink nudge nudge to the audience. It's just everything's coming out so naturally, the way you'd expect it. Like, he is just, we've all been there, that verbal diarrhea where you're like tripping over yourself, like you're forgetting what lies you've told, and yeah, it's just done so well. Because even I was like, I've seen this film like 5 times or something. I'm like, you said you wasn't there before. It's just like, you're meant to get found out.
But it's so funny as well, because obviously, like, at this moment in time, like,
no one's thinking you've done away with her. Like, everyone's just like, have you seen her? She's gone missing. She's stolen this money. Like, that's all people are really concerned about at this moment in time. Like, no one's thinking Norman's killed this person. It's just like, there's no need to get yourself into these like twists and turns. Like, you just need to say she was here, you know. But he's just obviously like, oh no, they're gonna like find out that I've killed her, and oh, it's, yeah, it's just a mess. And you just, you do feel tense. Like, the whole film's tense, to be fair. Like, there's not, I think from like, you know, from Marion stealing the money to, you know, Norman getting arrested, there's absolutely no let up. The film is just tension.
Oh yeah, 100%. You never have a moment to breathe. But I think that's a good thing with this.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's part of it. Like, the score builds the tension, the dialogue, the cinematography, everything. It wants you to be on edge. Let's get into that scene then, because it's probably it's the most iconic scene in this movie, but it's like one of the most iconic scenes in cinema. We all know the da 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 and the knife in the shower. What do you guys think of this scene? Like, there's so much to talk about this scene. It's so good, but like, what do you both think of it? Do you think it lives up to the hype and it deserves to be as iconic as it is?
Oh, 100%. Like, even before you see Psycho, you know that scene. You know the music, you know the you know the motion of it, so fucking brilliant, but you know, like,
we all are.
I just remember in the shower just being like, things on the wall, like, you know it before you see it. Like, that's how iconic it is. Like, how many films and pieces of cinema can you see it like have sort of permeated culture in the way that this scene has? Not even the whole film, just literally a scene. Like, it kind of be overstated like how unreal it is.
I know in some of the trivia as well that Janet Leigh, when she saw this, she was actually really affected by the scene, because like, even they've said that like, it looks like it, but it doesn't, you know, the knife doesn't permeate her skin, but it does look like it. And we'll look into the trivia later, but she was really like taken aback by that scene, because like, she was not expecting it, and especially for that time as well. Like, it's quite graphic, and it just, everything from the way it's shot to the iconic music, her performance, I mean, it's just standing the test of time. Like you say, the first thing that comes to mind for me is even Dracula. Dracula recreated that scene. Yeah. I know plenty of other things have, but like, how many times have we seen it be created time and time again? Lindsay, what do you think of this scene?
Yeah, it's like, it's an iconic scene. It's been parodied so many times. The music, the, you know, the blood going down the drain, even like the way she's lying after it's been done. But I think even as well from like a storytelling perspective, like the whole setup and leading up to it, there's so much like playing around with colour and lightness and darkness in this. And it's like right after she's made the decision to drive back to Phoenix, she comes out of the dark room and into the light to wash away the bad decision.
Yeah.
To then be killed. Because Norman felt a little tingle in his pants. Essentially.
Yes. Yeah.
So, like, even the leading up and set up of it, it's just such great storytelling. There's so much playing around with light and dark that way throughout this whole film to kind of show you where the film's going to go. So, yeah, I just think the whole thing is great.
It's just so shocking as well, isn't it? Like, even obviously, even if you know the scene, the first time I saw it, I thought that scene happened like at the end, or I didn't think she was like the main character. I was like, wait, what how is this happening now? Like, it's shocking. Like, I wish like, we could just experience what that audience in 1960 experienced. I bet that
that pictures must have gone off.
I know. Because there's literally another hour of going to go after she dies. She's just like, what is going on?
Could you imagine being in that audience in the cinema and just the, the gasps and the fainting and the the cries?
Popcorn.
I know.
But that's a very fair point. Like, even when I rewatched this today, like, and I've seen Psycho quite a few times, but I forgot how early on this is. Mm-hmm. And as you say, there's like a whole hour to go. So I think sometimes people don't, not that this movie doesn't get a lot of credit, it does, but I think people, because they see this scene as something so iconic, they forget that there is some other really iconic scenes in this in this movie. And pacing-wise, I know I'm jumping around a wee bit, but like, I don't feel like pacing in this is bad either. Like, we're what, just an hour and 40, an hour and 50? There's not any scenes in here where I'm like, oh, I couldn't be arsed with that, or, you know, that could be cut. I don't know if you two think that as well, but there isn't any scene where I feel like it's like so unnecessary.
I was like literally just thinking the same thing, like, because I checked last night to see like when does this iconic part happen, and then the next hour, like, I just felt like flew by, because there is no, it's not so much like it takes a just, like, everything flows really nicely together. There's nothing that, like you say, there's nothing that you cut. Everything just flows really well together.
Yeah, it's like every scene feels necessary to the plot. Like, everything after that, like, from, you know, the, like the sister and the boyfriend getting worried, to the private investigator getting involved, to obviously when they go to see the sheriff, and then you, like, get the little, the sort of mini bombshell of, like, oh, the mother's been dead 10 years, like, what the
dog?
Like, and even then you're sort of like, oh, yeah, maybe the mistaken, or, like, maybe it's, you know, maybe she is actually still alive. You're still sort of second guessing yourself, because you've had the rug pulled from under you early in the film. Like, it's, yeah, nothing feels unnecessary. I think, like, sorry to jump ahead, but, like,
oh, no,
I think the only thing I would maybe change slightly is right at the end, when you've got that whole monologue by the psychiatrist, that I could skip a little bit, like the whole thing, but yeah, from sort of like the bulk of it, yeah.
Yeah, we will get onto that scene, because like even we're looking at this in a 2021 lens, because this was in 1960, but the language that is used in that scene is rather problematic.
Just a bit.
just a wee bit. But we'll get onto the other kind of big death scene, which is I forgot the character's name, this is awful, is it Arbogast, where it's the stabbing and it's the stairs, and like, I've never fallen downstairs backwards, but I'm a clumsy bitch, and I fall downstairs forward, that is like my biggest fucking fear. It's just the way that the shot is done.
So, sorry, excuse the pun, but it's trippy.
It is for me probably like the only bad special effect, but I'm just like, it was 1960.
Okay.
There wasn't the facilities to actually push someone downstairs and film it, so we'll take what we can get.
I find it quite funny.
If it was Stanley Kubrick, he'd have been like, get down the stairs, bitch.
What do you both think of this scene in general? Like, do you like it? Like we said, it shows its age a wee bit, but like, it's kind of funny. It's got a wee bit of humour to it now, I think.
Yeah.
It's that way as well, like, when Mother stabs him, I'm sure it's in the chest, and then all of a sudden he's got, like, a head wound. where did that come from? But I quite like as well, like, when we were talking about, like, voyeurism, and there's a lot, obviously there's a lot of, like, bird imagery as well, and we've got this, like, bird's eye view of the murder happening. And it's such just, like, a strange point of view, considering a lot of the shots before that are like really based in realism. It's like, how would you see from that angle? I just find that quite interesting.
No, it definitely is. I I really do like the way Hitchcock shoots his movies. Like, even, like, Rear Window is voyeurism movie, basically. Everything is shot from, like, a sneaky perspective. That isn't the technical term at all, but sneaky perspective is what I'm going with. But it feels like the way they film everything, it's done intentionally. Like, even the shots, like, you know, when we have that shower scene and, like, the camera pans up and then turns to the bathroom, you see Marion's head next to the toilet, you can hear the shower still running. Like, all, it just feels like everything is done with a purpose, and I really appreciate that as well, because I like complex shit.
It was like, it was shocking as well, because I think even though, like, you just think, oh god, you've really got yourself into a bit of a hole here, like, he's on to you. Like, I think just because he's sort of like, he's law enforcement, you're not going to be that stupid, are you? Like, that's gonna get found out pretty quickly, Norman. But it's like, nope, no, okay, you've done it. Oh no, you've done it. So yeah, just, and it's like, again, it's that sudden, quick decision, isn't it? It's like, oh yeah, okay, we didn't even have time to think about it. It's yeah, instead, it's brutal as well. Like, when it's just, you know, I think with Marion's death scene, it was like, you know, a few stabs in the shower, and then it was like straight back out again, where it was like, right, stabbed you, you fell down the stairs, and then I'm going to keep doing it. When you're at the bottom of the stairs, it was like really rage fueled, wasn't it? Like, you cried too deep, you've got too close, you've seen too much, and I'm furious at you for doing that.
That's true. Cause
I guess, like, that is, like, one of the things about this film that I guess it, maybe its views on DID are, like, really, really dated, because it does seem to be a little bit of a premeditated, like, angle to some of the things that happen, because he really doesn't want to get found out for having this corpse in the house. But obviously he's always mother when it happens. And he puts on, like, the full, you know, the wig and the dress, because he has to be mother. And obviously, like, they wouldn't have known at the time. Like, they would have just worked with what they, with what knowledge that they had at the time, most likely. But there is, like, a bit of a premeditated angle to it. And I don't know, I wish that, like, that kind of side of things were maybe explored a little bit more. Like, is it all mother? Is that a bit of Norman? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like, and even though this is many decades later, and I know there is the sequel, and there's also, well, there's a Psycho's a trilogy with Anthony Perkins. I haven't watched the sequel or the third movie. I don't know if either of you have.
I haven't.
I've seen, the only thing I've seen of the sequel is, or like, heard of the sequel, is when the Dead Meat podcast talked about it, and
I've heard the same, that's why I've not watched it.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Like, I think it sounds like it's, like, if you sort of take out the fact that it's Psycho and just watch it as a film with Vince Vaughn in, like, it's a good time, it's a good way to spend an afternoon. But if you take away the fact that it's remake and Psycho, then you're not going to be very happy with it. Which is fair enough.
So that's fair. I feel like, again, going back to Bates Motel, because that's like a 5-6 season show. I mean, we can assume it's canon. Obviously, Hitchcock was not involved in that. I mean, he's not alive anymore, so he couldn't really say. But I feel like we get to know Norman as a character so much more, and like the relationship between him and his mother, and as we'll get into now. You know, we have the reveal that Norma is dead, so we don't ever get Norma's perspective on things.
Mm-hmm.
But we do get that reveal that Norma's dead. She's been dead for 10 years at the hands of Norman. So he killed his mother and her lover out of jealousy. They had a very complex relationship, which we will get into. And Norman is going into this role as mother. And as you said, puts on a dress, the wig, and embodies mother when he's killing. Not all kills, but we see it with two kills. What do we feel about mother and like this reveal, Like, what are you guys' thoughts on this? Because it's a difficult, it's a lot to digest. Like, it's very Freudian, you know, men being obsessed with their mothers, that there's a whole psychoanalytical side to this that could probably take a 5-hour podcast.
I know, like, obviously, you know, the character of Norman was based off Ed Gein,
yeah,
who, you know, had a very sort of famously turbulent relationship with his, like, idolised his mother, who, by all accounts, was absolutely horrible to him. You know, when she died, it was sort of kick-started his sort of descent into murder and things like that. So I think, you know, it sort of leans on that sort of storytelling and sort of inspiration from that. It's a really complex relationship, isn't it? It's a really complex character. I think it's just, I think, you know, if you were viewing it from, like, in 1960, you would just be so shocked that this is happening. Like, A, that someone's killed their mother, and that he's dressing up as her as well, wouldn't you? Whereas now we would see it as, this person's clearly mentally ill and they need help and support with this. You know, it's like you say, you could do, like, a whole long form podcast on Norman's relationship.
A dissertation,
Norman,
like,
yeah,
a PhD
literally.
On it. Somebody probably
literally.
Has done a PhD on it.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Lindsay,
yeah.
What do you think as well?
Yeah, like, in terms of, like, a character, I guess, like, we only ever get to see Norman's perspective of her because, of course, it's the altar that he's created in his mind that, we see it through, and like they do kind of try and explain later on in the film, like, because Norman was jealous of his mom and any other attention that she got, he makes his alter version of his mom is super jealous of him. I think it's kind of interesting. I don't know if Hitchcock was going for this, or maybe it was just a happy accident. Of course, Anthony Perkins, like, was gay himself, but obviously there's a huge amount of queer code in,
yes,
with Norman. The whole idea of being, like, obsessed with your mum and, like, being a bit of a mama's boy is kind of a gay trope. So, yeah, I find it quite interesting that it adds another layer to it. It's like, is he angry because he's supposed to be attracted to Marion, and that's why he goes into this altar and murders her? Or, I don't know, like, it adds this other layer to it, I think, that really, like, it's timely because, of course, gay rights were in the greatest of places and still are, and it keeps it timely as well, because we still live in this, like, heteronormative world where everything we see is men and women together, and same-sex relationships are still seen as abnormal, so it kind of gives it that timeliness as well.
100%.
He's the ultimate unreliable narrator as well, isn't he? Like,
yes.
his perspective of his mother be complete bollocks. Like, she could have been the loveliest woman.
Exactly.
And he's, like, the sort of, obviously, the argument we hear him having when Marion sort of first gets into our room, like, that's obviously him having, like, sort of creating that argument, and it's, you know, what the situation he's created in his mind to sort of cope with the guilt of him having murdered her. You know, it's really tricky, and it's a very sort of strange relationship, and it's just, yeah, like, some of the lines he comes out with when it's like, oh, boy's best friend is his mother, and it's just like, oh no,
red flag
biggest red flag one.
Absolutely.
that's so true about the queer coding as well, because Alfred Hitchcock is known to queer code so many characters, and he did work with a lot of people that were publicly out as gay, also were in the closet. There has been a lot of talks about Hitchcock, if he identified in the community himself. Obviously, he doesn't always portray queer people in the best light. We have that example in Rope as well, where we have, it's not ever said, again, because of the Hays Code, and, you know, there's these tropes made where you can't say somebody is gay, so you make this trope so the audience assumes they're gay, and we can see that in Rope as well. We have two men on screen, and, you know, they're villainized and things like that, and you could say that for Norman as well. But you are right, it is timely, because, like, how many people do we see on screen even now that are queer-coded, or probably now we would say queer-baying, where a lot of studios will say, like, they won't say this person is gay or lesbian or bi, but, like, we'll put that in our marketing because we want to, you know, target a certain demographic and get more money. That is very timely, and, you know, the fact that, like, we're still having this debate now just goes to show that there's still a lot that needs to be done. In terms of, I'm jumping a little bit, but when we get the, you know, the scene where Norman does get caught as he is in the role of mother, and, you know, he's just about to make his next kill, and then we have the therapist, not particularly the best therapist, kind of giving this, like, monologue, as you were saying, Sophie, about the situation with Norman, and we can tell it's, like, quite outdated, you know, when he's talking about gender identity and talking about mental health. Like, this is the only part of the film that, like, leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Like, I am trying to look at it because it is 1960, but how do you both feel about this kind of scene and, like, the wrapping up of the therapist saying, you know, this is why Norman is how he is and why he does what he does?
I'm quite a bit more, like, willing to forgive the kind of mental health side of it, because the idea is so complex. Like, I still don't, like, we really fully understand it. So if in the 1960s, saying some of the stuff they said, that is probably how they understood it back then. And yeah, it's not right, but I think that kind of more shows us the journey that we've been on with mental health and medicine. The bit where they're talking about, like, transvestites and cross-dressers, though, I was like, come on.
Yeah.
Again, like, it's homophobia is probably what a lot of folk thought back then.
Yeah.
I was like, it's not about sexual gratification, like, it's just clothes. Like, it's material that you wear on your body, it's not that deep.
You could tell that was the part, like, it was like, oh, murder, yeah, whatever. But the dress, oh my god!
That was absolutely, like, the worst part of it for so many people. The fact that he wore a shirt dress, like, yeah. Jesus Christ.
The audacity, kill whoever you want, but wearing a dress? Scandal.
Yeah.
Scandalo. Scandalo.
I don't think it wasn't even the sort of, like, you know, obviously, you know, the language was, you know, harmful, and I think it was more like just trying to, like, wrap everything up in a nice little tiny bow,
yeah,
and, like, explain everything to the audience. I think it was, for me, like, we've just been on this tension-filled journey where, you know, we haven't necessarily had our hand held, like, we've been on this journey, like, we've been able to read as an audience, like, these situations that are happening through the actors being amazing and the score and everything like that, and then it's just like we've just come to a juddering halt and we're just being talked at about, like, this is why he feels like this is why this is happening, like, he's half this, he's half, mother's taken over. And I just sort of found myself, like, just glazing over a little bit. And I think, you know, you could have just sort of ended it at, like, you know, he murdered his mother and the lover, he thinks he's mother now, or something like that, you know, like, in whatever terms. And then just cut to Norman in the room, and you're left sort of in that ambiguous space of, like, is it Norman? Is it mother? Like,
because then that, I think that sort of would have just kept that tension maybe building just a little bit. I don't know, that made, like, that's just how I felt about it. Like, the end, that sort of ending scene just wasn't, it just wasn't it for me.
it just wasn't hitting right. No, I get that, because, like, throughout this movie, we're not, the audience isn't having their hand held, you know. Like, a big part of this film is, like, there's so much that we don't see that the audience has to decide for themselves, or, like, we're supposed to be left wanting more. Like you say, Norma could be the loveliest Quine ever, or she could have been, and we don't know, because we're only getting one side of the story. You know, we're never really told anything about their relationship very much at all. There's a lot that's left unsaid, so I feel like it just kind of doesn't fit with the rest of the film. And if they just cut that scene and had Norman getting arrested or something, and then just cut to that, because I feel like the last scene is really good, especially when we get the voiceover of Mother, and we have the fly and everything, like, it, that is such a strong scene, but it almost gets kind of overshadowed by what you have before, because, like, you're just, like, rolling your eyes, like, okay, we don't really need this, you know?
Yeah, because you're like, oh, okay, well, now I understand why that's happening. Like, it doesn't take away from the fact that scene is, like, it's still great and it's still creepy, but you're sort of like, oh, okay, now I understand why, where I think, like, if you'd have maybe just had that as, like, a standalone, it would have made it 10 times more, like, effective, 10 times creepier, and, like, you maybe would have left the pictures being, like, hell, like, how scary was that? Like...
Definitely. So that's kind of, like, the film in a nutshell, really, but is there anything else that you guys want to discuss before we get into trivia, like, any scenes or themes or people, anything that we've not touched on yet?
I just liked that Marion's last name was Crane and he had birds everywhere. They were meant to come together. Like, maybe it was like fate. And I think they both saw each other for, like, who each other really was in a weird way. And, like, by them coming together, their fates were, like, sealed. I'm reading far too much into the last name Crane.
Oh no, but you...
there is, like, a huge amount of mirroring in this film, and there's so much camera play with the mirrors too. Like, in terms of, like, those two mirroring, on her drive over, there is actually, like, a shot for shot what he looks like at the end of the film, she looks like in the car. She's staring directly at the audience and smiling the exact same way that Norman does as Mother at the end. So there is definitely meant to be this parallel between the two of them, and I think it sets up so well for Marion being the main character and then Norman just picking that up and taking it over for the rest of the film. So there is definitely a lot of that, and again with the birds, there's almost the foreshadowing earlier where Marion's like, oh Sam, I just want to have dinner with you at my house, and a picture of my mother hanging on the mantel.
Yeah.
And then it's like she has, like, almost like Norman's mother, like, with the birds, like, staring over her while she has sandwiches and milk, which is the weirdest thing ever.
Oh.
Like, do you want some sandwiches and milk? No.
No, absolutely not.
My lactose intolerant arse,
nah. Exactly. Do you want to have some sandwiches and milk in my office with a strange man who has dead birds?
No. I love stuffing things. Like, oh, I bet you do, you dirty creep.
filthy. But that's true, though. That's true.
And it's like, again, with the drive over and the play of colour, like, we go from daytime to nighttime. And it's almost like even the transitions between the shots change. Like, we're going into a different world. They go from, like, fades to, like, very quick cuts. Like, zooming in, zooming in, zooming in. Like, we're going into the, like, Norman's dark underworld. And then at the end of the film, it's daylight again, and this is when Marion's been brought out of this, like, the swamp. Like, I don't know what that is. So...
Jamie, he could stuff me anytime.
He is very good looking. This is, like, a totally different thing, but this is the first time I've watched the film for a while, and I was like, oh, you look like someone I've slept with. Like, that's what I'm saying. I was like, oh my god.
There's a lot of absolute fitties in this film, like, to be
there,
fair.
There is. There actually is.
But, I just think this film is like a complete masterclass in filmmaking. And I just think subtle things like that, like there's so much colour play, even though it's black and white, there's so much play around with the mirrors, because Marion and Norman are two sides of the same coin. All the playing around with birds, we have the bird's eye shot at the start of the film, the birds being there to kind of foreshadow a kind of like predatory nature of what's going on, even like the different types of birds, like one being a scavenger and one being a predator, and like Norman's a predator and Marion's a scavenger because she just like swiped up that money. There's just so many clever things done in this film, like I think we probably could talk about it for like 5 hours, you know what I mean?
It happens, like what you say about the colour as well, like, even down to, like, what colour bra she's wearing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Starts out as, like, all angelic with a white bra, and then she nicks the money, and she's like, oh, you devil, you've got black bra, like, you're
ooh, la,
a scandalous woman.
A wee trip to Ann Summers, you know, get a wee lacy thing going on.
Norman doesn't like that.
Oh, no. Is there anything? Look, we'll go into trivia. I'm gonna. There is a little bit of trivia I've found, but is there anything else that you guys want to discuss before we go into that? I think we've kind of covered a lot of it.
Yeah.
Is there any trivia either of you two have? Because, as I said, I don't have the show notes, so I'm currently looking. There is some trivia I have, but I'm also looking for other trivia that might be interesting. But if you two have any, please do.
I think I gave mine away quite early.
Yes, just the one about just the first time that a flushing toilet was ever on film.
Yes.
And people literally lost their shit about it.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll tell you while you're having a little look about more of the Hays Code violations, because I thought that was quite interesting, because it was over 10 violations, which is, I kind of love it, it's iconic. So the first one is, no full-size bed may be displayed. Whoops, the very first shot was psycho.
No full-size bed?
No, you can't full. The Hays Code was awful weird, Sophie, honestly, it was bizarre. But yeah, that first shot zooms in through the window, full-size bed. So you couldn't do that, so night off, great start. Undergarments may not be shown. Well, we have Marion, you know, tits out. Well, not fully out, but you know, in her bra and everything, we have that shot straight away. And Sam is shirtless as well, so even the poster has her in her underwear. So, like, they really just weren't caring. The next one is, criminals cannot be made sympathetic. Well, we all feel a wee bit sorry for Norman, don't we? And then, like, as it mentions in here, like, the primary source of drama in the initial first half of the film is hoping that Marion won't get caught. You know, we feel for her. She's stolen the money, but we feel bad for her. So, they definitely, you know, we felt for the bloody bears having a nightly snore there.
I know.
Oh,
the
bless him.
Man.
The next one is various prohibited words are not to be used. So they had a few of them. They actually had to pull out a dictionary whilst they were filming as well to see what was classed as like prohibited words. There are a couple, mainly being from that end scene with the therapist, you know, saying transvestite and all that awful stuff. The next one is, no lustful or suggestive kissing or anything that stimulates the lower and baser element.
Oh my god.
So nothing that gets you spicy in your drawer as well. We're all a victim of that watching this, and also Norman is. I mean, like, first part of the film, we get the scene on the bed. You know what I mean?
That first scene is just triple homicide.
Oh,
that's got to be a new pickup line for loads of people, isn't it? It's like, oh, would you like this stormy law element?
That'll be a new one we'll add to the list. The next one is the sanctity of marriage and the home had to be upheld. Well,
that's
exactly. Again, that first scene is the majority of these violations. Like, Sam is divorced, Marion isn't married, you know, sex before marriage. The audacity of it, you know? Sex? God.
Disgrace.
Disgrace. Disgusting. Methods of crime are not to be detailed. Well, have some pretty detailed murders. And the last one is nakedness is forbidden. Well, we have the shower scene. Like, even though it's not full front of it, Marion's naked. Like,
you can see a hint of tit at one point, so.
Just a twinge. So, Hitchcock pretty much looked at the rules of the Hays Code and was like, yeah, I'm just gonna go against this one and this one, and this one, like a Rolodex. So, I thought that was quite interesting.
Goes towards like how it still holds up nowadays, because all of those things are like so ridiculous. Like people get divorced, like people split up, it's normal. People don't shower in swimsuits, like people in toilets, like in their beds, like it's all so normal. But these things were, you know, obviously go against the American policy, didn't they? So.
Exactly. I'm just looking at other trivia. I know we've mentioned quite a few of them. One thing that's just stuck out to me, Walt Disney actually refused to allow Alfred Hitchcock to film at Disneyland in the 60s because Hitchcock made that disgusting movie Psycho. So Walt Disney was a piece of shit anyway, but he was not about Psycho. So Hitchcock was banned from Disneyland after
Walt
that.
Walt Disney made Song of the South.
I know. I think that's a bit worse.
Jesus Christ. I know there was I was reading that there was like a whole like mandala effect type thing on the blood in the shower where people really remember it being red. Like obviously even though it was a black and white film, they were like, no, it's definitely like it's bright red. I remember there just being bright red blood running down the plug hole. And it's like, no, it's definitely black and white still.
I was going to say
they made it using chocolate syrup as well. So, like, even if it had been in colour, it would have been brown.
I suppose it's just so vivid because, like, the syrup has that, like, thickness to it. And it's just, even though you don't actually see anything, you've never seen the knife penetrate the skin, it's just like... Yeah, that's exactly what it
would
look like if that actually happened.
Yeah. To get the sound of it as well, they stabbed a melon.
Yeah. Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a melon.
I only found that out really very recently as well, and I could proper, like, hear it.
Yeah.
Like, the sound of the knife, like, yeah, it's really
It's a good
done.
Sound. Like,
it is.
It's a great sound.
I listen to a lot of, like, ASMR when I go to bed, like, I'm just going to have that on, like, a loop. Just stabbing a melon.
I went through a phase of doing that as well until one night it was somebody whispering.
Oh,
I
can't attack
them.
No.
Oh,
no. I was like freaking out that somebody was just
It's
like
heavy rain sounds on note. Don't whisper in me again.
I'm going through a weird period now where I'm listening to jazz before I go to sleep, so I'm just imagining myself with a whiskey and a cigar. Like, it's very, very dignified.
Not in the chaos.
I wish I could get into ASMR. Like, I know people like really like it. I've never been able to get into it. It just doesn't do anything for me.
Ian tells me off for mine.
Oh yeah. Just do that just for him. There you go, Ian. Enjoy that. We listen back.
I don't think you can hear it on the actual podcast, but he gets it right in the ear.
I didn't mind it. That's kind of there is like so much trivia around this.
Yeah, there's quite a few changes from the book. Like, she was called Mary in the book, and Norman's like a big fat old guy in the book as well. He's not the handsome Anthony Perkins. You know, I don't know if I would sympathise eyes were going to quite the same as yours, this fat old guy.
If he actually looked like Ed Gein.
Might not as be as sympathetic. Adley Perkins was actually paid $40,000 for his role, which is the same amount of money that Marion embezzled, so that's kind of cool.
Good for him.
Good for you.
It only costs like $800,000 to make, which I think is crazy.
It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. I mean, what would that actually be the equivalent of now? Let me have a look. Equivalent of like 7 million, but even still, like, for a movie, like how many things have we covered that were like 25 million, and it's like, how did you spend the money? Like, who's getting paid that much? But unless there's anything else, we can go into our ratings. Before that, we'll do the game, because we love a game here, we love a competition. We'll do the Rotten Tomatoes game. Let me bring that up just now. So we'll have you both guess what the critics and the audience reviewed Psycho. Let me just have a wee look-see. And I'll have to get you to put this in the spreadsheet, because, well, I know I'm at the bottom of the list and I take that as my brand, but Ian and Lindsay are rather competitive, and they've been neck and neck for a while. Well, actually, no,
I'm not competitive about this. I just, like, it genuinely brings me so much joy to try and guess what it's going to be. Ian pointed out a few weeks ago that I'd, like, guessed them all right for a good few weeks in a row, and I had not even noticed.
Oh, yeah, you had, like, a 3-week streak or something, and then
something like that, yeah. I didn't even know. I'm just happy to be here.
I'm just happy to be
doing the thing. But let's start the game then. So what we'll start off with our guest. Sophie, you can start.
Oh,
so what do you think the Rotten Tomatoes critics rated Psycho out of 100?
It's got to be high, isn't it?
This is the critics. The critics, it's like a hit or miss. That's not a hint, but that it, like, we've seen some of them and you're like, are you joking?
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, they're a bit weird doing that. Well, I reckon for Psycho, it's a classic, and I reckon 95.
Okay, and Lindsay, what do you think?
I think about 95 as well. Like, literally, like, if it's less than 95, I'm going to be raging. Like,
throw hands,
so
I just take your headphones off, like, I'm done.
She's doing a Preston on Nevermind the Boys, gosh.
I'm off. Open the fire, Dix.
Get that fire exit, though. what do you think? You have to make a guess.
Yeah, I said 95.
Oh, you said you're both 95.
Are you guessing the same?
Yeah. Well, I've never guessed the same before, but I'm going 95.
You're both going to be real mad at this. It's 96.
Oh my god, so close. Oh, so I guess we both win.
Yeah, both win. You both get trophy. You get trophy, you get trophy. In terms of the audience, then, we'll start with Lindsay. Lindsay, what do you think the audience rated Psycho out of 100?
I hope it's still going to be as high. I'm a bit scared after, was it last week, a film that I loved, the audience trashed it, and the critics loved it. So, I'm gonna go 85, as high as the critics.
Okay, Sophie, what do you think?
I'm gonna go with 90.
90. Sophie's taking it. It was 95%. The audience did good and all.
Oh, that's good. I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But I'm actually, like, for once, the audience and the critics are in agreement with each other.
I was gonna say, I don't think I've ever heard where they're like, there's like just a percent in it.
No.
Like, there's usually like a canny gap between.
I don't know,
like the scores in there.
I felt so bad for you, Lindsay, last week, because, well, we know my opinion's on Terrifier, but don't take my opinion as gospel, because I may have found a clearance, but I was gutted for you, because the audience were not about art.
Oh, right.
I was shocked, like, that the critics rated it so high. I thought it would have been a proper audience fave. Because
yes.
It's a cult classic.
Yeah,
now.
It is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, the critics gave it, like, 60, and it was really low from the audience, kind of, what it was. It's like, fucking school.
The We're audacity.
The gall and the gumption. With that, we're going to go on to our ratings, and we'll let our guest go first. Sophie, what do you...
I always feel really tense doing this, and I don't know why. I think it's, like, the pressure.
Oh, there's no pressure. I mean, you've listened to the podcast. Half of us
no,
are in disagreement all the
I
time.
Just, like, just pressure from myself. Like, knowing, like, I've got to give the final score. Because, like, it's... I don't know about you, but, like, you know, when someone says, what's your favourite film? And it's like, I've never seen a film. And you're like, I don't
know. What is a film?
Okay, so I love this film. It's like literally you can just watch it again and again and again. Like a lot of the themes are very like timeless. The acting is incredible. The score is like a character in itself. Just everything is just. The only thing that just left it down slightly is just that little chunk of monologue at the end. So I'm going to give Psycho a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10? That's still a very good score. Lindsay, what are you going to score Psycho?
This is, like, probably my favourite film, like, ever. It's just a complete masterclass on how to make a film. Every single part of it for me is just near perfection. From the colour play, the light and shadow, the script, the acting, like everything is just so great. So that's probably the only time I'll ever give the score as well. I'm gonna give it a 10 out of 10.
A 10 out of 10. We need to get the fanfare effect post edit.
I've never given a film a 10 out of 10. I knew me and dishing out like we're sweeties, and I'm like,
I've only given 2 10 out of 10s.
Oh, have you actually?
Yeah, it didn't come from it. It was Little Shop of Horrors because I love that film, and Ginger Snaps as well.
I think I gave that an 8.
Well, we still never forgive him for Eden Lake in Friday the 13th Part 2. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, yes, because Hotel Transylvania is better.
It's the best film we've done.
10 out of 10. I'm in a complete agreement with the both of you. I absolutely love this film. As I said, like, not as a person, but Hitchcock films I'm a big fan of. That's like one of the first styles of film that I really got into that was related to horror, because I'm a big fan of film noir as well. This is probably my favourite Hitchcock film, very closely next to Rear Window and Strangers on a Train. The only thing that is putting me off giving it a perfect score is that dialogue in that last little bit. Not even just the because of how it's outdated, but like you say, Sophie, and I hadn't really thought about it like this till we talked about it, it does kind of take you out of the film a little bit. You know, like the hand, you know, it feels a little bit like hand-holding and stuff like that. I feel like if that wasn't there, it'd be a perfect score. I'm going to do something Lindsay really doesn't like. I'm giving it half score. I'm going to give it a 9.5 out of 10. If I could, I'd go like 9.8, but that'll just send her vengeance, so.
That's a bloody vengeance, eh?
No. But I think we're all in agreement that this is a really good film. You know, we're all ranging from the 9 to 10 mark. I don't have the spreadsheet on hand, but I'm sure Ian will put it in our list of 147, well, more than 147 movies, and that there is bonus episodes and stuff like that, but I'm sure it is going to be in the top tier, as it should be. It deserves to be.
I'll hazard a guess that it's in the top 10. If not,
yeah.
Like, be bold and say the top five.
If it's not the top 10, I'll be raging. I'm not gonna lie, it's very raging.
Although there are some like big films that aren't in the top 10. They're like just missed by a whisker, you know.
I think with our audience and critics falling,
that'll bump it up.
Yeah.
I think it'll be top five. I mean, we'll have to. We'll all be waiting to see. This is the tension building, you know.
We'll need to get the debrief on Thursday and be like, where does it rank?
Yeah. No pressure, Ian. But come on, we want to know. With that, I'm gonna have a look at the listener opinions. As usual, we put the poll out on Twitter and ask for people's opinions. So I'm just going to cherry pick a couple from the thread about Psycho. Matthew Frentz says that at the time it was groundbreaking work, and entire genres of film wouldn't exist without it. Hitchcock was a genius in his time. Outside of that vacuum, it hasn't held up as well as Psycho 2 does, and Hitchcock has become so influential on modern directors, his actual work is boring. That's quite
a hot take.
That is a hot take, isn't it?
The tea is scudding.
I'm not. Each to their own, Matthew, but I can't say I agree with you necessarily. But hey ho.
It's so funny, like the sequel, the remake, I'm sure like Quentin Tarantino says it is like one of the best films ever made, and I'm like, I know you're a wee bit off your rocker, but are you okay?
It's all that toast up in it, Sunday's
fish.
Oh, I'm just thinking back to Love Island.
That's the real horror story here.
We need to do a Love Island podcast. We'll do a special.
Oh, the last season of Love Island, I listened to the podcast religiously every day. And I forgot it existed until right this second, so I'm going to have to do that now as well.
Yeah.
All the content, you see, we can't keep up.
Ian's being born one episode and we're starting a Love Island offshoot.
Yes, we are.
Oh my god, he's going to be so rich.
Sorry, not sorry.
Behind the hideaway.
Oh my god, yes.
Yes.
You can be the narrator, Sophie. You can be the voice and everything.
Awesome. Tonight.
Oh, that's some encouragement in the chat.
Grasik has also been watching Love Island. Grasik also feels for Hugo. We were chatting about this earlier. I was like, feel bad for him. But anyway, back to listener opinions on Psycho. Adrian Lee says that Psycho was a revolutionary film. It was shot in black and white despite the studio wanting it done in colour. Hitchcock took out a mortgage on his house to help get it made. It created the first ever "don't reveal the ending, you have to see it to believe it" craze, which worked. Which I think is really interesting. I didn't realise he actually took out a mortgage on his house as well, so he was like really invested in this movie, which obviously paid off, you know, but...
Did he not like buy up, like, he bought the rights to the book, and I'm sure he tried to buy like all of the books as well, because he didn't want anyone to read it before, like... the film came out.
He's like, no, you can't read this.
No, not like.
Because I think the book came out like not that long before the film. Was it maybe a year or two before? Something like that.
I can't remember.
I feel like it's 1950s. So I think he must have seen that and straight away was like, oh, this would make a great film. Had to snag on it. I'm just seeing some other opinions. Somebody else, Tarek, says that the soundtrack was something out of this world. I know we have spoken around it, but the score in this film is like one of my favourite scores in a horror film ever. Like throughout the film, it's just so tense, and I feel like they did a great job with it.
It's like this and Jaws. It's like, it's hard to find a score that's equally as iconic as those two. That it's been so influential, that it's been so used in all your TV and film. Like, there's nothing else that's comparable.
We'll go to one last opinion from The Madman. Nice name. he says that this film has had a huge impact on the horror genre as a whole. It proved that horror movies not only could be popular, but if done right, could shatter box office records and be profitable. That's very true. It did make a big profit. I'll look into that actually after we've gone through this. He also says that this film showed that music is just as important as anything else, because if you take the song out using the shower scene and replace it, or take it out completely, it would change the whole scene. This film was revolutionary in every way and deserved to be seen at least once by anyone getting into horror. And I would agree, not even just horror, somebody that's a film fan, I would recommend Psycho. Psycho would be like right on the top of my list.
Definitely. I did read that Hitchcock initially wanted that shower scene to just be completely silent. I'm really sorry, I forgot the guy's name who did the score, but he sort of did the piece of music and showed it to Hitchcock, and he was like, yeah, my bad, yeah, we're having that bit of music in over it, like I've made a mistake.
No, I wouldn't be able to tell you who did the score, but whoever did the score, we bow down to you.
I feel like it began with a B. I feel like it's Bernard something, but that could be just complete
like Bernard
bullshit.
Herman or something.
Yeah. Let me have a little look. Bernard Herman.
Oh.
So very close. There you go.
Look at my brain.
We also put a poll out, as we do for each week for the movie, asking the audience what you would, what your thoughts on the movie. Is it yay, nay, or meh? And for Psycho, 87.2% of people voted yay, 2.7% voted nay, and then 10% voted meh. I want to know who voted nay.
Who's just meh? I can maybe understand people saying nay, like, but who's just meh? I feel like it's not a meh piece of film.
No. Definitely not. Yeah, it's like, it's the kind of film I feel like you are going to feel something. Like, to come away from watching Psycho and just be like, I feel nothing.
Yeah.
It's bizarre to me.
Grassic, I'm not telling you what I voted. We won't come for you, I promise. Not too much. Well, I can't speak for these two, but I won't come for you. But that's still pretty positive. Like, 87%, that's pretty good. I mean,
yeah.
I'm trying to think back the way, Lindsay, like, for the other polls. Like, that's still pretty positive compared to some of them. The mess usually get a lot more than that.
Yeah, definitely.
Just having a look at the box office as well, as you've mentioned, Lindsay, this had a really small budget, 800,000, which is the equivalent of 7 million, but even still, that is a relatively small budget. In the box office, this got 50 million, which at the time would have been massive. I'm going to have a look, actually, what that would be in 1960. 50 million. I have to put the whole thing in. Over 400 million. So that was like that's like Lord of the Rings esque box office hit kind of style.
It could pay his mortgage back and get another house.
Yeah, exactly.
Mortgage free.
Yeah, bitch. Ballin'.
So it was a complete success, and you know, there's not many horror films that we can think of that have done that well at box office. Like, there's this, there's The Exorcist, and there is probably a few others I'm thinking of, but it's a small handful, you know. So it was definitely a huge, huge success. Is there anything else that we've not spoken about that you want to touch on that I've forgotten? I think that's pretty much everything. I know it's been a bit of a shorter episode today, folks, but as I say, we've been winging it tonight, but I hope you've still enjoyed the chaos nonetheless, and
yeah.
I've been an okay host, I hope.
Yeah, I think you've done top there.
Thanks. Anything else you guys want to mention before we get out of here? No? Love it. Oh, we do love a wee bit of chaos. The next choice, actually, what is on the schedule next?
The next episode on Thursday, we're going to be talking about Treehouse of Horror, The Simpsons seasons 2 and 3. So that's going to be really fun. And then next week, it's Ian's choice of film, and we're going to be doing Get Out.
Ooh.
I'm I'm really excited about that. I covered Get Out on the House That Screams podcast a little while ago, and I won't give my full thoughts yet. I don't want to spoil it, but I love that. I love that film. I think that...
I really like that film as well, and I haven't seen it since... I went to see it at the cinema, so I haven't watched it since it came out in 2017. So... yeah, I'm looking forward to revisiting it.
I would have loved to see that in the cinema. There's some certain shots in that, like, oh, like on a big screen in a dark room, like perfection. Sophie, are you a fan of the Treehouse of Horrors or Get Out?
I'm a fan of both. Yeah. Particularly Get Out. Like, I saw it quite late. Like, my, it's going to make it sound like such a loser, but like, my partner and just mates in general down here aren't really like horror fans, so I don't really get to see them in the pictures or anything, so I usually have to wait till they come on the telly and then I watch them by myself. So but me and Lucy, we were talking about when we did the stream that we're going to try and do put the pictures on our own, so I might try when things sort of calm down a little bit, put pictures by myself to see something like horror film related. I'm gonna try and be brave. But yeah, love Get Out. It was like just mind blowing. Like, just remember seeing it being like, this is like nothing I've ever seen. This is so good. And like Treehouse of Horror, like it's Simpsons and Halloween and horror. You can't go wrong. It's brilliant.
Especially the classics, like the first few seasons of Treehouse of Horror are just like absolutely iconic. So
yeah.
We've been speaking about doing it for a while.
Look it up, like what the bits are for Treehouse of Horror, and it's like some of the most iconic ones ever, like in The Raven. It's gonna be one of, I think it's like a season 2 Treehouse of Horror, so yeah, I'm looking forward to getting into them.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen. That's gonna be so good.
Oh, that'll be so good. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in today. Thank you both for joining. If you want to find us on all the socials, as mentioned before, I mean, you're on the Twitch anyway, but you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Behind the Screams. We're also on TikTok. This will obviously be a VOD on the Twitch channel for 30 days, but this will be released probably tomorrow or maybe the next day, just depending. Need to get confirmation from Ian, but you can find us anywhere that you can listen to podcasts at Behind the Screams. Lindsay, am I missing anything there? I think maybe not.
No, I think you've got it all.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you can find us everywhere, and if, like I said, if you want to watch back, you can, or you can listen on the download. And thank you to everybody that is listening on the download as well. I should say that as well. We appreciate you greatly. But if you know, if you like hearing us, and you know, you want to get some more of our own content and all this chaotic goodness, Sophie, where can people find you for your amazing makeup looks? And I have to say, like, the decades is amazing. I know you were taking the mickey a bit out of your last one, but it's iconic. Like, the commitment,
so spot on.
The commitment to the cause is real. Where can people find you?
So I do makeup on my Instagram feed, which is Sophie Serves Face. I'm currently doing a makeup through the decades series, and I am doing the 2000s at the minute. So I've just done the everyday sort of look, which is skinny eyebrows, frosted blue lids. It's a tragedy, really. But coming up tomorrow, I will be doing the sort of 2000s subculture, which I think will appeal to probably quite a lot of people who like My Chemical Romance and Panic at the Disco.
Well, we're both already bought in and fully invested.
Yeah, which was me throughout the 2000s. So yeah, that's Sophie Serves Face on Instagram. But I am also on Twitter. I'm usually on there all of the time. That's Soph Surf's Face on Twitter. I couldn't get enough characters to be the same as Instagram. So yeah, Soph Surf's Face on Twitter. So if you like chatting shit and memes and Love Island chat, which it probably will be for the next few weeks, sorry, not sorry. Yeah, give me a follow on there.
We love it, we love it. Lindsay, where can people find you?
I'm at HiItsLindsay_ on all social media.
I love that, because you're always just straight to the point, like, yeah, here's my handles. But Lindsay is also a bit of a comedy queen on the Twitter. You've been posting about Love Island and all, so, you know, if you want Love Island content, follow these two.
Yeah, come and speak to us.
You can also find me talking about Love Island currently as well on Twitter at Lulu_Pew. I also stream at Lulu_Pew on Twitch. Like I said, I've been fundraising for the month of June for Mermaids, but I play a variety of games on my channel. We have community games with me, Wolfie, Lucid and Spider. We play Don't Starve together. Also play a variety of RPGs and just thirst over like all the characters in video games. So if you like that kind of content, then my Twitch channel is for you. And yeah, speaking about horror and speaking about the Hero Scream anthology that's getting released later this year. So all the things horror and gay, you can find on my socials as well. But yeah guys, let's get out of here.